and welcome to the Taproot Talk podcast. I'm going to start off with a joke. A man is walking through a forest, and he comes across a witch in a clearing. The witch turns to him and says, "Now it's time for your third and final wish." "What do you mean?" said the man. "Who are you? What are you talking about? What do you mean third wish? What happened to my other two?"
"Ah, I see," said the witch. "Yes, yes, yes. You see, your second wish was that your first wish be undone, all of its consequences erased from existence, down to any memory even remotely connected with it in your mind."
"Whoa," said the man, "that sounds like a terrible wish. Okay, well, if I've only got one wish left, I'll have to make sure it's a lot wiser than that one. So what's the wisest wish I can think of?" And the man sits down and he starts thinking. He's like, "What's the best wish I can think of? What's the best wish? The wisest wish, the wisest wish, the wisest wish. I've got it." And he stands up, wheels around, turns to the witch and says, "I wish to know my true nature." "Very well," said the witch, as she waved her magic wand. The wish was granted, and as the witch disappeared in a puff of smoke, the last thing the man heard her say was, "Although it's funny, that was your first wish." Now, I love that joke. I don't think it's necessarily the funniest joke I've ever come across, but it cuts pretty close to home. I think it cuts to the heart of why I'm doing this podcast and perhaps why you're listening to it. This podcast is about finding a way forward from the feather insight in the book, The Feather, that I wrote. That means I'm going to assume you've read this book. This podcast is specifically for those people who've read it and who didn't look away. It's a scary thing to see and a very intense one. And I felt that rather than try to bring it out to the whole world and show everyone and go, "Hey, everyone, look at this," it would probably be a lot more humane to simply speak to those of us who have actually seen it. And in that capacity, I suppose, I don't want you to feel like I'm standing above you, telling you what to do or what to think or what to feel. I'm just as much of a rabbit in the headlights of this thing as anyone else is. You know, I saw it of myself. I saw it 5 years ago, and it was a shattering experience. But recently, as I detailed in the book, I had an even more shattering experience that everything I did 5 years ago to try to shift my life onto a different track had brought me full circle around to exactly the same point where I was before, where every part of my life, and really every part of my life, was just an act of theater, just something I was doing to show off to myself, to create and sustain this beautiful idea I had of who I was. And it was a hard thing to see. It was a hard thing to see again, you know, to see it a second time, and to see the futility of everything I'd done, and, you know, how hard I was working, and how, you know, much I felt in my heart I'd like really held myself to account and really faced the truth and really changed. It just wasn't true. What I'd succeeded in doing is changing the shape of that show I was putting on for myself. The show had taken on different terms. I was doing it in different ways. But the things I was doing were profoundly limited and dysfunctional. Nothing was working. Like, nothing would ever work. No matter how hard I tried, no matter how much I pushed myself. I look back and I don't know, even didn't damage my health potentially long term, just because I was driving myself so hard to go do this, you know, pushing my I found out, I didn't really know this before, I found out that I can write at a certain level solid before my brain just collapses and it just can't go on. And it's like being concussed. Like I am like just walking around like a zombie for the rest of the day. I literally can do nothing, but I can't even, you say can do nothing. I can't even watch television. Like the mental engagement needed to look at something. No matter how nonsensical or shallow, I don't even have that because I've burned it all out. And, you know, I discovered, oh, that's a thing. And then I discovered, okay, that's a thing that happens every single day. But if I push it, like, say, if I push it 5 days in a row, then that fifth day, there's not much of me left. It's just not really growing back anymore. So I need a weekend just to sort of let my soul come back and kind of regrow from this broken state. The point of me saying this isn't to show off and say, hey, look how much work I did. The point is the opposite of that. It's to say, look how all that work meant nothing. Look how futile that all was and how pointless it was for me to think I could just drive my way out of this through sheer force of will. It is a sobering thing. And it's, again, it's a struggle to get it across because in many ways, for me, I can see it. I can see what I did and I can see how extreme I was about it and how much I really just like held myself, I believed, to account of everything I was doing and really pushed myself to be as straight a shooter as I possibly could. The entire thing was a charade. And it was a charade that caught me when I myself had seen exactly the kind of charade it was, right to the bottom of it, in a really deep and sort of focused and intense way, which is what I'd done when I first came across the feather thing. So what to do? You know, where am I now? How do I move forward from this? Because it just seems so catastrophically futile. You know, the if effort can't do it, or this can't do it, that can't do it. The idea of the taproot is what I wouldn't even want to say what I came to, because that even sort of sounds like, you know, it's this brilliant idea I concocted because I'm so clever, and that's not really true. It's more that when I saw what was happening to me again for a second time, that was, a shocking, ugly, painful thing to see and really depressing, really depressing, really, savage. But I will say this, and this is something that was very true the first time as well, which is that the kind of destructive emotional spirals of depression, of which I'm very familiar, those spirals of like depression and self-hate and self-condemnation and spinning down inside that, those things are, I discovered, and this is completely true for me, so please don't feel I'm pointing fingers, I'm kind of exposing what's going on with myself. Those things are just more elements of that show of my own virtue I'm putting on for myself. So if I'm hating myself, if I'm condemning myself, if I'm raging at myself, I'm so terrible, I'm so wrong, it seems as if something's changed, right? Like if I'm going along thinking I'm so amazing and then I see, oh no, that's a lie. So I start going, oh, I'm terrible, I'm awful, I'm such a terrible person. It seems as if I've turned 180 degrees and I'm facing the opposite direction. What I can now see is that's not true. And that was something I remember being very clear the first time I saw this 5 years ago. Seeing the lie of your own virtue also applies to the virtue of depression. So the virtue of being down on yourself and going, I'm so terrible, I'm so awful. There's a virtue in that. Does that make sense? Like that's what I can see. There's a, when I'm doing it, yes, it's extremely painful and can get brutal. I mean, I can be an absolute bastard to myself as much as I can be to the people around me. But the thing is that when I am, and honestly, I can't find a single instance of any instance of depression in my entire life that I can look at, and there are many, I can't see a single instance of that where I am not showboating to myself about how moral I am because I'm so full of regret or so full of despondence and sadness and despair. And I've also found that something similar is very true of anxiety, that there's things that scare me, absolutely. But that kind of like gnawing anxiety where I'd kind of like fall down inside that spiraling pit inside myself is like just like boiling slowly in a cauldron of corrosive fear, like that. When I look at that as an event, as I am doing it, as I am experiencing that in myself, when I got stuck in that kind of place and fell down into it, it's like there's such a massive part of that which is me showing off to myself about how deeply I care. You know, that I'm worried about this because I care so much. And I worried about that because I care so much. And this thing really troubles me because I'm such a caring person and I really care. And there's this repulsive ugliness to it when I see it in that way. You know, when I'm going through it, I remember like it feeling like the most, I don't know, I wouldn't necessarily say pure, but like, yeah, I guess that like at the heart of my anxiety was this, I don't know, this idea of myself as this really caring person who really, you know, if I had the power to change all these things, of course I would, because I'm such a wonderful guy and I really wish I could, but I can't. And what if they go wrong? And oh, it'd be so terrible. And I care so much about all of this stuff. I look for even one part of that that isn't just a show. You know, one part of that. And this is the thing. I'm not saying that I was vain sometimes or that sometimes I was arrogant. I'm saying that there's nothing else but that in terms of my personal character. And that was and is a profoundly shocking thing to see. And there's this huge difference between seeing it and arguing with myself about it, or I don't know, like poking myself or trying to kind of punish myself because it's true or whatever. You know, if I'm seeing the reality of it, which I literally just mean looking at my actual life, looking at real times when I've really done this. There are many, right? And seeing, okay, well, this is what I thought was going on. This is what it appeared to me at the time. Let's see if there's even one part of it that is actually that, or if the entire thing is just a show of that just for myself. And it's a really easy test to take. It's a really easy test to apply to any experience, whatever it is, experiences of depression, anxiety, experiences being in relationships where I've had a quote unquote argument with someone that I at the time was like absolutely sure I was in the right. I look back at those things now and it looks just harrowingly different in a way that's just, I can't even describe it. It's horrible. Like it, just to see myself and the way I just demanded that this haughty, entirely hollow sort of like theater of me that I had going on in my own head was accorded total respect at all times. And if anyone even, not even questioned it, that doesn't even need to get anything like that far. If someone even, you know, failed to sufficiently worship it, that'd be grounds for a tantrum, you know? And like I say tantrum, that kind of really understates the severity and savagery of my emotional response, you know? And so, I mean, I just a full-time nightmare, you know, to be with as a guy. And I'm like, oh, that's such a painful and humiliating thing to look at. Like, it's just awful, like awful to see it. But the first point I want to make about all this is that seeing something that bad doesn't throw me down into that hole of despair. Doesn't throw me down in that hole of anxiety as long as I stick to the feather, as long as I'm looking at whatever reaction I have, the pain, the sorrow, the suffering, anything like that, and just going, how, is any part of this anything other than just a show I'm putting on for myself? Any of it. When that pain comes, it itself is just another object lesson. It's another example of just what this is. And that itself is extremely painful. You know, it certainly isn't like, oh, so does that make it hurt less? Like, not immediately, no. Immediately makes it hurt more because I see how fake I have always been in, you know, even these deep, intimate feelings I had that were, you know, so central to how I experienced life. Like, nope, it's all just a charade. The whole thing, it's just noise I'm putting on for myself. And that means that I'm then immediately confronted with a very clear view of the reality of the kind of guy I am, which is a horrifying thing to see. I mean, it's so unpleasant, like really unpleasant. But what you see, you can't unsee. You know, what you see, you can't unsee. So these things I see of myself that are true, and it's not to say that it was a time I failed at this point, or a time I failed at that point, or I got this bit wrong here, or that bit wrong there. That's not what it is. It's like there was no time at which I wasn't getting it wrong. There was no time at which I wasn't just evoking and creating and driving this horrible lie, you know, and this lie of who I was that was so real and visceral and charismatic and pungent and all of these things that, you know, what I see and what I'm seeing much more of this time, now I'm kind of sticking with this kind of thing and properly forcing myself to go out and look at this kind of stuff every single day. What I'm seeing is that this is who I am. Not even who. What. This is what I am. This is what I am. And it's not something I did wrong so much as the basic reality of what I am as a person, someone who is entirely devoid of real goodness. There's just nothing there. Now that's a hard thing to see. It's a painful, scary, difficult, annoying thing to talk about, but all of that pales in comparison when you're just staring down the barrel of the gun of this clear, obvious, undeniable reality. I mean, it's a savage thing. Like, it's so painful. But what it does, like the immediate experience of it, is that it creates this absolute repellence toward any whisper in my mind of my own virtue. Anything to do with that, any thought, any little, even tiny little thought that comes up, it's not that I have to sort of pick up each one and examine it one at a time. That's not it. It's that it just makes me recoil, like from, because I've just come off of seeing exactly what that kind of thing really is, exactly what that kind of thing, you know, really leads to, and what that kind of thing's really cost me and everyone around me. And so, and doing this doesn't stick for very long. Like that repellence, that feeling, I mean, it's, yes, I can't unsee what I've seen, but I can look away from it, and I can just kind of fudge it with myself, and I can compromise with myself about what I should be doing in response to it, and I can kind of sort of go, oh, I'm a bit tired, oh, you know, this is good enough. That's good enough for today. You know, I'll give myself a bit of a break. I don't want to be so hard on myself. All sorts of stuff like that. And, or even, you know, more insidious things. Like just little, I've noticed like little daydreams I have, or little just arguments, I'll kind of like imaginary arguments I'll have in my head where I'll kind of say something to someone and they'll say something back and I'll say something. Just a little 1-2-1 kind of thing in my head where I'll just have a little back and forth, just imaginary in my head about someone, about something. And then I'll stop And I would never have stopped before. I would have just let it slide, let it go, and not even think of anything. But having seen what I've seen, and only if I've seen it recently, I'll stop and I'll look at that and I'll think, holy shit, that is very specifically pushing me in a very specific direction. There's an agenda here that's very clear to get me falling in love with myself again. It's like being charmed by yourself, like being seduced by yourself in your own mind, like that, just at the level of the sort of background hubbub of your thoughts, like that. That's the kind of thing that I just don't think it's possible to consciously kind of like control enough to stop the infection coming back that way. And so it is exactly that level which the idea of my own glory is smashed right back to every time I force myself to go down that line again, to really look at the feather, to really look at, you know, myself, weighing myself on those scales in some new way. And this brings us to the heart of what I really wanted to talk about in this first session, which is, I guess, the difference between treatment and cure. And this is in response to an email that someone sent me about the book, The Feather. I sent it to a few people who I know who'd been following my work, and they were kind enough to read it and get back to me with some feedback. And I really want to make sure, as much as possible, that these podcast episodes are all about that. Like, what I really want this to be is for people who've read the book, who have looked at The Feather or are considering looking at it, and who are having some actual issue, something real that's a problem for them, or they're tripping over something, or they've got some kind of, you know, issue that isn't really connecting. I understand that a lot of the issues raised in that book, especially around sort of the conceptual evolution, a new form of life, all that kind of stuff is very interesting to talk about, just if you want to bounce ideas around. I feel that in the light of what I feel has been revealed about human nature, that if we're just kind of bouncing ideas around so we can kind of admire ourselves for how clever we are and kind of get excited about the ideas and go, oh, isn't this interesting, and just going to have a lovely recreational distraction and kind of jump on into all this crazy stuff. I feel that if we're doing that, I mean, I certainly feel that if I were doing that, I'd be an absolute blithering moron, you know, because it just seems like such an obvious trap, such an obvious way back down into the hold of this parasitic thing, you know, that can take any form, doesn't really care what it looks like, and just wants to jump into the driver's seat and drive us around. You know, it doesn't care where we're going as long as it can crash us into a wall every now and then. And the deeper issue, rather than looking at the kind of edges of new potential discoveries or anything like that, is what has happened to you? What has happened to me? What are we? What are we? And what's the way forward from there? And this is the podcast, I guess, for people who aren't willing to kick that can down the road anymore. You know, and so, and of course, they will be relevant to what we're discussing, those ideas of conceptual life, human evolution, all of that stuff. Absolutely, yes, they will be discussed in this podcast. We are going to go into them, but only, I hope, in relation to the real issue we are really facing. And the real issue we are really facing is that there's something really seriously wrong. And that thing is very specific and, from a certain point of view, extremely visible. Yeah, this isn't, I don't feel it's necessary to kind of persuade or argue about this. I feel that the feather test exists, and I can see what I can see through it. And having seen that, I look around the world and I mean, it seems to me just overwhelmingly obvious that everyone is in the same boat, which means we have a problem that we need to get to grips with. And that's not just something as a planet. We need to get to grips with it as individuals, because this thing is extremely poisonous and very destructive. Our first email, then. Let's get to the question that this guy sent me, because it's a really good question and it really cuts to the heart of all this. This is someone who's known my work for a while, like I said. So they read the original book I put out, which was called The Uncovering, not The Feather. The Feather was originally supposed to be just a rewrite of The Uncovering, but it just turned into something that I felt was very different. The entire second half is completely different, and the tone is different. I feel that it's a completely different book, you know, in terms of where it goes. So this is someone who read the original and read this one, and he said, oh, where are we? Boom, 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 boom. Oh, here it is. Okay. Sorry. Okay, so here's what was written in that email. He says, hello, man. I found the later chapters interesting. Honestly, I never stopped looking, so I don't know exactly what's the difference between the Taproot and what I have been doing. I read the Taproot section 2 times. Maybe I'm dumb. So basically, is it just to keep looking more intensely? Now, to understand where he's coming from, really need to explain a little bit about the first book. The first book ended with a kind of, I don't know, I suppose I'm very big, you'll discover this, I'm very big on my visual metaphors. I think visual metaphors are a really good way to kind of get a really clear shape through into my mind and get right to the heart of a really weird, complex issue. If you can just get something really evocative that just goes bam, it's this, then it just helps use it, you know, in some way, if there's something you've got to do with it. And the metaphor I had at the end of the first book was the metaphor of the avalanche, that looking at this thing is initially very difficult and you're going to want to flinch away from it. And I think that, I don't know, I mean, maybe someone would have a different reaction, but it's just such a terrifying and unpleasant thing that I think anyone is going to flinch away when they first see it. But pushing further into it pushed me beyond a certain kind of threshold, I suppose, where instead of kind of trying to flinch away from it, to push it away, to get out of the situation, I said, there was a kind of threshold I crossed where I went, instead of going like, oh, I don't want this anymore, I don't want to look at it, I was like, okay, well, if I've got to look at it, I'll look at it. So I want to look at it all as deeply and as fast as possible so that I've got it all seen and so that I can get through it and out the other side. And that shift, I suppose, in attitude toward what I was, you know, butting up against, was the thing that triggered this avalanche effect. Because what suddenly happened was that I suddenly discovered this massive array of things about me that I had no idea were true. And every new thing, all of them were horrifying. And every new one I saw, I'd be like, oh my God, wow, that's horrific. Wow, is that true anywhere else? Oh my God, it's true everywhere. Oh wow, this is horrifying. And then I'd see even deeper into it and I'd see all that and then go, oh my God, this is even worse. This is so worse. Oh, is there, this can't be true there as well. Oh my God, it's even true there. And it was like the bigger the insights I got into who I really was, the bigger the insights I could then go on to get. If that makes sense, that like the more I could see of what was happening, the more I could imagine of what might be, and then look for that, and then see, oh my God, that's even worse than and it just sort of compounded itself. A very intense experience, and I don't know. I think that the first time you take the feather test is gonna have to be something like that, you know, because it's just such an extreme revelation. It's just such an extreme discovery, you know, this thing has hidden us from ourselves. And in doing that, we are all walking around the world with this massive secret in the center of our lives. And it's absolutely mad when you see that secret and you can see it. And it's just, I mean, just the scale of it alone is mind-numbing. I mean, it really is the most, and I hesitate to use the word because I don't want to sort of in any way sell this as something that's going to be fun, because it really isn't, but there is an absolutely spectacular scale to what is going on. Look, just the scale of it, like the scale of how wrong I was about who I was, the scale of how wrong we all are about who we are. It's vast. It is vast. And this is one of the reasons why it's just impossible to, I think, tell people about this and go and just sort of go, hey, this is what's going on, and have them go, well, I'll consider that. Okay, yeah, sure. Because you can't really consider it like an idea, because the truth of it is just so massive. It's too big to imagine. And so it can only be seen, you know, and that's why the feather has to be the center, I think, of certainly my attempts to get this across to people and go like, you know, there's this thing. And, you know, I'm not going to try and tell you it's nice because it isn't, but I think it's necessary. I feel it's necessary. I feel it's urgently necessary for my own life that I saw this. And I'm very glad I did. I'm very glad I did. And I mean, even just saying it now, like, and just talking it out, I can see the kind of seeds already planted of how that, I don't know, approach to the issue was in its own way doomed. Because right at the sort of right in the heart of it was that kind of flip from the sort of, I don't want to look at it, I want to get away from it, to I'm going to look at it all so I can get away from it as fast as I can. And that second one is still about fleeing. It's still about getting away from it. It's still about finding a way out, finding a way to get away from this, to have it be over, to have it be done. And with that desire, sooner or later, I mean, and I look back, I took months, honestly months, I mean, weeks, the first few weeks were, you know, extremely intense. I mean, that was the true avalanche of it. That was just, I mean, the hits kept on coming. That was a really painful few weeks. But, I mean, I kept at it for months, you know, really driving myself at it until I really felt things had leveled out. And I was really looking at it. And I was just, okay, things have leveled out. Okay. So now let's get to work. You know, like, now let's do something. Let's try and help other people. Let's show this to people. The problem was that any level of compromise with this opens the door to it again. Because it's a parasite, and you can't compromise with a parasite. You can't compromise because it's a biologically observed law that parasites will reach a state of equilibrium with their host. And that equilibrium is essentially set, the terms of it are set by whoever wins the fight. And if it is the host animal that wins, quote unquote, wins the fight to sort of with the struggle for dominance with the parasite, then that parasite is pushed into like total remission, I suppose. I'm not sure what the medical term for it, dormancy, I guess. But the other way around is true. If the parasite wins, then the parasite dominates the organism, like totally dominates the organism. And that is exactly what I saw of myself. That prior to the first time I saw this with the feather, like the first time, like 5-6 years ago, before that, I had been dominated by this parasite. And dominated is exactly the word, like totally dominated, not just for a little bit, but for my entire life. This thing had been in the driving seat, you know, and the only real limitation on it was what it could get, what I would justify to myself. Which is a limitation, but again, not as much of a limitation as you'd want, and not a very good limitation. A lot of issues where I'm being very dishonest with myself about what I'm doing, anything like that, and it just lets it off the leash and to do something really unpleasant. And I've done a lot of really unpleasant things in my life. So the issue is, I don't really, again, I said this in the book, I really should look this up. I don't really know what a plasmodium is, technically. Some kind of germ, some kind of microorganism. It's the thing that is behind, Toxoplasma gondii, the thing behind the disease toxoplasmosis, that thing that rats have that makes them, you know, try and get it on with cats. But the point is that the body can't clear it. The body can't get rid of it. You can't kick it. You know, you can't just get rid of it so that it's truly gone and it's completely dead and it doesn't exist in your body anymore. If you get it, you've got it forever. And that, I think, might be true of this, that this parasite we're looking at, this conceptual parasite that takes the form of our own best and most beautiful ideas of ourselves, like that, I don't think that life form is something that's ever going to, you know, my feeling is, I don't think we can kill it in the sense of like, kill it so that it's dead, kill it so that we don't need to worry about this, kill it so that it's gone. And that, when I look back, is exactly what I was trying to do. I was trying to do a kind of, it's weird, a kind of, how do we even describe it? Like, I suppose the way I'd think of it would be kind of chemotherapy for the soul. Like, if I could look at this horrible, terrible stuff for long enough and feel it deeply enough and go right into it and suffer enough and all of that, not to make a show of my own suffering, but just to kind of like see the searing intensity of it and experience that. If I could do all that, then this stuff might die. But the truth is that I don't think it can, because it's just too small. You know, in the same way that like a microorganism is too small. What is the sort of the tiny, like, what is the thing it can be beaten back to that it can't then grow back from, right? That's the question. Like, if I've got this massive idea of my own moral rightness and I'm doing something because like this is the thing that's going to help, this is the thing that's going to change the world, this is the thing that's going to help people, this is awesome, and I'm really, it looks so moral and compassionate, but really it's just a show of my own compassion and glory and sacrifice I'm putting on for myself. If I'm doing that and I can see that that thing is a show, and I look really deeply into it, that really damages that show. That really breaks it, like breaks its hold over me, and it cracks it like an egg, and then it really does. And I feel this immediate, painful, but dramatic reduction in like sort of like that heady arrogance and delusion. It really does go very quickly, but that little background level of thoughts, the little background bubbling up of little kind of like charming, cool, funny little things about who I am to myself, that doesn't stop. And I don't think it can. And I don't think it would be wise to make it stop, because I mentioned some, I can't really go into it in this episode. We will deal with it in depth in another episode because we have to. The issue of mindfulness and kind of meditation and kind of peace. I look at that kind of stuff that I used to be really into, and I look at it and think that's actually extremely sinister now. I think there's some really sinister stuff there, much more sinister than I ever thought. All that beautiful, kind of innocent, lovely appearance that it has, and that is even very deep, and kind of like all the deep profoundness of it. To me now, I look at that and the hairs on the back of my neck rise up. I think that's extremely suspicious. But we're going to have to stick a pin in that, because we're going to come back to the email. This is why I need to do the emails, by the way. This is why I need your actual real life responses, so I don't just vanish up a philosophical hole of my own ass. The point is that the paradigm I was coming at this from is that, you know, I was trying to kill this parasite by a really extreme, severe blast of seeing the reality of who I was and driving myself deep, deep, deep into that. And that was essentially the answer from the first book and the point of what I was doing. Now, this guy who emailed me, he says he's never stopped looking. He's never stopped seeing that this is true. Well, what I would say is that, yeah, neither did I. I never stopped seeing that it was true. I never denied it. I never thought like, oh, that isn't real. I never stopped looking at certain parts of myself, certain things that I'd done, certain mistakes I'd made, certain issues I'd been grappling with. And, you know, I never stopped looking at that going, well, that was just a lie. This was just a lie. Everything I did was just a lie. It's all just a show I'm putting on for myself. That never went away. Like, it's not like I ever forgot it. The parasite was so much more subtle than that. It was that it turned the insight I had into another charade. You know, that's how subtle this is. That's how effective, but also how massive it is. And so, to my mind, I was completely aware of the parasite, completely aware of its effect on me, its baleful effect, constantly working, as I believed, to keep it at bay, to keep on top of myself, all of this stuff. And none of that was true. You know, this is the point that, you know, you think like, well, I mean, I'm doing this, I'm doing all of this stuff. Like, are you? Are you? Because even just a few weeks ago, I would have said, well, yes, and fuck off. You know, like, yeah, leave me alone. I don't want to think about this. You know, don't start giving me shit. Yes, of course I am. Leave me alone, right? But then even that defensive reaction speaks volumes for the truth of the situation. The point I would make is that this parasite can and will adapt and shift and move around into any shape, whatsoever that might be, in your own mind as an idea of you. And it's more than happy, more than capable of warping into a shape that presents itself to you and says, hey man, I found the last chapters interesting. Honestly, I never stopped looking, so I don't know exactly what the difference is between the taproot and what I have been doing. I read the taproot section 2 times. Maybe I'm dumb. So basically, what is it? Just to keep looking more intensely? Is that your voice saying that? It sounds like you, I'm sure. Sounds completely natural, normal, charming, honest, you know, like a guy trying his best, you know. I'm of course I'm up for doing it. I just can't quite see how this connects to this. I mean, if there, I'm sure it does, maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. Maybe I'm stupid. I don't think intelligence is the issue here. I think infection is the issue. If I were you, and look, I'm not here to diagnose you. I'm not a doctor. You know, I'm not here to tell you what's happening with you. You're the only one who can see that anyway. So if I can see something and I go, oh, this is happening with you, what do I win, like a prize? Is there a, what? Do I get a hat for it? No, you know, and it doesn't help you. The issue is, what do you see of yourself? Yeah. And the point I would say is to take what you're feeling here and subject it to the feather. Test what you're saying here by the feather. So when you say, you know, I found the later chapters interesting, I never really stopped looking, so subject it to the feather. This question you're asking me, you know, like, what do I do? Is it this? Is it that? You know, do I need to look at it more intensely? Is that what it is? I mean, I can't quite see what I'm doing wrong. I've been doing this. Does it help? Is it not? Take that feather. Look at what you're saying and ask yourself, you're the only one who can see this and you're the only one who seeing it would matter to anyway. Is there any part of that, entire issue you've raised that isn't just a show of your own virtue you're putting on for yourself? Anything? And if the answer is no, is it enough for you to say to yourself, oh, I feel really bad about that. Oh, it's terrible. I'm such an asshole. I got this wrong again. Okay, that thought will probably rise. But is there any part of that that's not just a show you're putting on for yourself? Anything at all? Any part of that that's not just a show of your own sorrow and I didn't mean to, oh no, it's terrible, and I'm beating yourself up, going, oh no, I'm such an asshole. Why have I got it wrong again? Oh, I'm so... Any part of that that beats the feather? Because if there isn't, that's just a show as well. And then you start to see the depth and extremity of what you really are. You know, what's really going on. And that is pain. You know, that is like, oh wow. Not only am I lying to myself, and again, look, I mean, I'm not here to, it's so hard to talk about this stuff without sounding like I'm coming down on some, like a ton of bricks, and I'm not, and I want you to know that I am a guilty man covered in guilt. I'm not standing above you wearing a wig in a courtroom, banging a gavel and being your judge. I'm a convict. I'm a convicted felon. That's my position in this whole thing. Yeah. So The issue is, okay, if it's all just a show I'm putting on for myself, and if the reaction to it, the pain and the sorrow and the guilt and the shame, if all that's just a show I'm putting on for myself, what am I? Like, what is revealed of me then? What is revealed of my nature? And then, you know, this brings us right back to the sort of, the in many ways, the problem with this whole thing, but in a way, the opportunity, I guess, if you want to, I don't know, glass half full, glass half empty, which is that it has to be seen. You can't argue someone into it. You can't push someone into it. A person has to see it of themselves, and no one can be forced to. Everyone can choose not to look. And when you see the reality of what you are and how totally it is dominating you now, right now, this moment is happening now. You're not like, oh, wow, at that point in my past, you know, oh, yeah, no, there I was. No, now it's happening, right? When you see that, and you know, that's where I find I get this really clear and horrible view of just how in love with myself I was and that self I was in love with. You know, I think that, you know, the guy who sent this email in, and please, it's terrible, it's like first podcast. It feels like I'm just beating this guy up. Thank you so much for sending it in. Thank you for being brave enough. And I'm not trying to hurt you. I hope this helps. I really hope this helps. And I wouldn't give you this stuff if I didn't believe that you were brave enough to see it. Like, it's a hard thing. But if you see it, yeah, then the dominance can be broken. And I don't think we can shift the infection, as in kick it forever, kill the parasite. Perhaps that's true. I don't want to rule it out. But I think we can break its dominance. Absolutely. And I think you can break its dominance. 100% yes. 100%. Yeah. And that's how to do it. The thing about the feather, you really can apply it from any perspective to anything that you're doing. And in that sense, there's so many doors in, so many ways in to that perspective of looking at yourself and seeing the truth of who you are. But I really think that if we shift the task from killing the parasite to breaking the dominance and keeping the dominance broken, keeping it pushed down and dormant like toxoplasma, in that situation, I feel that there's a real future here. There's really something we can do. I really feel that. And again, look, I not only am I not a doctor, I have no one to experiment on but myself. And that has not always been true. People have put themselves in my hands and I've been like, hey, do this, it'll be great. And it hasn't worked. Or it's worked and something terrible has happened. That's true. That has happened. I've done that. And I don't want to belittle how irresponsible and destructive I have been to other people. It is a really ugly, ugly, despicable thing to look at. And so the nature of this podcast is not so much to put ideas out there that you should do because I say that you should do them and you trust me. I think that would be a really bad idea for us both. What I want to do is put out the experiment I am running on myself and give you the results of that. And so you can see, okay, this so far is what he's experiencing. And then even if things implode and it goes wrong and nothing works, I'll have put that in front of you guys as well. And you can see, okay, he's gone this way. It hasn't worked. It hasn't worked in these ways. So if you yourself are someone who goes, I see this feather thing, I'm not going to look away. I'm going to see the truth of who I am. I'm going to live with my eyes open, not my eyes closed. I'm going to live, you know, I'm not going to stand for being a slave or a thrall to this thing. I'm just not going to do that. If that is you, you can look at my experience of how I'm grappling with it. And if you find anything useful in it, fantastic. And that, I think, is more than worth just putting this out for. Yeah, because it's such a severe issue and such an extreme one. But looking at suppressing this rather than killing it really is working significantly better. It's difficult. The obvious answer is like, well, if you're so self-deluded, how would you know? Which is entirely fair. The answer is, I would say that firstly, there's just been a lot of savage, humiliating collapses of my own grandeur. And then just see it, and it really is just this feeling of like kind of snapping back to the real world, and then just seeing the real people in it, the people I'm really engaging with, and the value of those people, the importance of them. And again, that's not to say that I am therefore good because I see this. It's not like that. It's just that I would be horrifying and appalling to an even greater degree if I were to sideline the reality of these people for whatever bullshit I was up in, you know, in my head. That would be an even more horrific crime than anything I could possibly ever want to do. And it would just be monstrous and nightmarish. And so because of that, I'm like, well, then I, you know, just not because of the presence of my goodness, but just because of the absence of that towering arrogance that was always such a huge part of my personality that allowed me and drove me and in its own dark way inspired me to cross so many lines. When that collapses, there's just this sort of like, this desperate horror of doing that's just very real and very palpable, like a desperate horror of cutting corners with people, of just using people, of pushing people around like they're things or means to an end, that whole part of life. Yeah, I always used to think, I heard someone say it somewhere, I don't know where, but they said, if the end doesn't justify the means, you're working toward the wrong goal. And that was exactly who I used to be. That's exactly who I used to be. And now I feel that, like, it seems agonizingly, painfully clear that if the end I'm working for requires any level of stepping on someone or pushing someone down or crossing some line with someone, that I should definitely not be doing it, that people are hugely valuable and important and should never be treated in anything like that way. And sorry, I know that all of this sounds like me moralizing. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm so good. This is what I feel. It's not what I feel. It's what I see in abject fucking terror, because I am not that and have never been that. And I've always been the guy who's crossed those lines. And the idea of continuing to be that guy fills me with like deep, deep, nauseating fear of just how despicable and base that would make me. So and I honestly I feel that it clearly would, like, you know, like that this isn't, you know, some kind of like highfalutin moral structure I'm like dropping across. I mean, it's just screaming at me from the reality of what I see. Now, I would just want to say a couple of things directly to the guy who sent me that email in, to go right into the heart of the answer to that question. What is the difference between the avalanche and the taproot? What is the difference between the kind of one-off, searing, massive, explosive looking into what's really going on with you, as opposed to every single day having a time that you specifically go, okay, today it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's 7 o'clock in the evening, whatever that is, you know, I'm going for a walk. And you go for a walk and you spend an hour and you really look at some new, and what you're searching for is some new connection you haven't made yet about the nature of who you are. And when you see it and it's horrible, instead of beating yourself up or condemning yourself, you see the emptiness of that as well, how that's also just a show. And then you see, okay, this, you start seeing more of the actual reality of who you are. And that thing that you see can't be unseen. And I do really think that more than anything else, the seeing of it, seeing of something new that forces the parasite to take a fundamentally different form so that it can then fool you and twist that new thing into some new way, What that means is that the parasite has to start from scratch. It has to go back to that level of kind of bubbling background thought and start from there. But if you're doing it every day, that means it can never get beyond that point. And that's the theory. That's what I'm working on right now. And everything in my experience is saying that, yes, it's working so far. It's early days for me. And all I can do is put this stuff in front of you and show you what's going on. So the difference, let me just really sum up. The difference is a big one-off hit that changes your perspective. That's the old way of doing it. The new way of doing it is every day, actively get up, go out, look at it, look at the strongest part, look at what you're feeling right now, look, anything that you have, all your ideas, anything that's going on with you, anything you're working on, or how about this, any decisions you made recently that had any consequences of any scale whatsoever, especially any kind of negative consequences, anything like that, look at them through the feather test. Yeah, subject them to that test. Is there any part of any of this, any part of my decision making, any of it that wasn't just me showing off to myself about how amazing I am? Any of it? Yeah, every single day, as ambitious, as aggressive, as relevant as you can, as close to the bone as you can get. Yeah, and I mean, what I find is like, it's really showing me a lot. It's showing me a lot I never saw 5 years ago. It's showing me things that it's really extreme. But the freedom I get from it, from that control, being controlled by that mad delusion, it's palpable. And I would never want to go back. And all the pain is an extremely small price to pay for that level of freedom. That's just my take. And I hope you feel the same. But whichever way you go, now, I just want to say thank you so much. I am deeply grateful for anyone who responds to this. Your responses are the lifeblood of this podcast. And if you find yourself having any issue whatsoever, or any success, or any comment, anything, whatever it is, just hit reply to the email where you got this and send it through. If you have gotten this podcast because a mate's given you the file or something like that, the email is kieran@taprootalk.com. So that's kieran@taprootalk.com. My name has a weird Irish spelling, so it's C-I-A-R-A-N, so don't trip up on that one. But yeah, so I hope you found this useful. It really is my honor. And I just want to say, anyone who has decided that they are happy to pay for this podcast, the £5 a month payment, thank you. Oh my God, thank you. Like, you really won't understand how massive that is to my life. And I thank you so much. You support me. You make this possible. And I really appreciate you. And I love you from the bottom of my heart. So there we go. Thank you so much for listening. And I will speak with you, hopefully, in about a week's time. So thank you so much. And this has been Taproot Talk. I've been Kieran Healy. Send me your emails. Let me know. Talk to me. And goodbye for now.